Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and founder of the Authority Engines, where we help tech businesses and leaders turn conversations into clients and expertise into pipelines. And I am so glad and I'm glad we got to this point today and this week because I'm really looking forward to this week's episode. We're going to be talking about how do you build a trust culture? How do you stand out in a crowded market? What do you have to do that's different to everybody else in order to grow? And so much more. So if you are an MSP, if you are a VAR, or you're just in the tech industry, pay attention to this episode because it's going to be an absolute corker. So without further ado, Matt, it's great to have you here. Why don't you start off by giving us a little bit of introduction about who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, thanks, Gary. My name is Matt Myers. I am COO of System 7. I have been in and around technology for pretty much my whole career. I started in 2001 at a phone company, of all things, and worked my way through all of the technical positions and into management, and ended up at System 7. I am not necessarily one that is the most technical. I just happen to work really well with technical people. So this is where I ended up.
Well, brilliant. We've got so much to dive into today, you know, and so much of your story. But let's start with your journey. What led you, because that's an interesting story as well. What led you to System 7 and what was the draw to this space originally?
Yeah, so I worked for a phone and internet company out of Seattle, and we bought a company in Texas, and we bought their whole Texas operation. And I moved to Austin, Texas in 2006. And one of the very first people that I talked to was Keith Gard, who owns System 7. And he was my first customer. At that point, I was a national account manager. And he was one of the very first people I met in Texas. And we hit it off. We became fast friends. And we had such a good culture alignment. I mean, it was one of those things where at the time, System 7 was fairly small. And it wasn't realistic for me to leave this big corporate job I had to go to System 7. But that changed over time. One, I wasn't enjoying the big corporate lifestyle. And so I decided to leave and do my own thing. And Keith at that time had reached out and he said, well, why don't you come over here? And him and I had talked at length about culture and the idea of like, maybe it would be okay just to build a place that's very cool to work. Like, could it be as simple as that? And so we decided to do it. So in 2014, I came to System 7. And ever since then, we've been trying to build that culture, that place that we've always just wanted to work at.
Do you know what? I love the fact that you see your business as a culture. And the culture that it grows within and then externally, as opposed from externally and inwards. Yeah. And the fact that you had this strong alignment in values with Keith, your co-founder, how has that shaped the company's culture today?
So is everything, quite honestly. So every facet of the company, and this is something that we had to learn over time, was that culture was not a marketing term. It wasn't this thing that we talked about and be like, oh, it'd be nice if we did a thing. You have to look at the operation from starting with purpose, vision, and values. And you have to make hard decisions that sometimes don't make a lot of business sense when you line up we need money and we need to protect our culture. We learned over the first few years that we made decisions that were good business decisions, but it hurt our culture. And what we found over time was that it wasn't something we decided, well, that was a wrong decision. It was that it became obvious that it was killing our culture. So we stopped. And we've always been willing to walk away from some money in order to protect the experience of the employees. And quite honestly, just keeping focused on our purpose is generally to improve the lives of those around us, starting with us and our own families, right? And then all of the staff. So there was a lot of lessons that we learned the hard way, where we made decisions that I think a lot of businesses would make. And then we realized that we would go a year and realize the culture was off. And if we are being true to ourselves, that the reason why we're doing this is to honestly build a better place to work, then we've got to change and we've got to pivot in ways that maybe didn't make sense to some people.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I want to dive deeper into that, because especially when it comes to customer happiness, not just satisfaction, especially with the employees. But before we do that, for those who don't know about System 7, what evolved you? You evolved from telecom into managed IT services. What prompted that shift? And how did you know that was the right move to make?
Yeah, that was a tough decision. And I think actually Keith and I had talked a lot about, we did not want to necessarily go towards IT, right? We wanted to, there was a lot of services that we could add. And really what we ended up doing was we started with phones and internet, and then we added managed networking because we wanted to control the phones experience. And then we would add, basically, we would start supporting IP connected devices because we were experts in that arena. And eventually, I think what we found was that part of the reason why we didn't want to go into IT was we didn't believe it necessarily fit our culture. And part of that was the experiences that we'd had with IT companies were not positive ones as an ISP. And then we were exposed to the better side of the MSP community almost by accident. And we hooked up with people like Todd Kane and guys with the Tech Tribe. And we started seeing these people that operated like we did and wanted to be a part of a community like that. And so that helped us actually make that decision of, hey, we already do IT light, quote unquote, right? We really should, for us to move forward, it felt like, especially right around COVID, we had to make some choices about what were we going to do with the business. And we decided that, hey, our culture especially was one of trust and building relationships with clients. And what better way to do that to then really get in bed and do what we were already good at? We've always been surrounded by IT and technical people. And I feel like we did a good job of hiring great customer service people on the technical side. And so it made a lot of sense for us to join that community. And we were actually invited by a lot of people in the community, which made it an easy jump to get into managed services.
I see. Yeah. So moving in, especially when you've got to choose from what you know to where you want to be, and then also making sure it's a comfortable place to be as well, to make sure that you can still not just be in it, but actually be involved and evolve within that field as well. And that's a very important point when it comes to, as you say, changing or making that shift or making that pivot. But I want to talk a little bit more about the business and its differentiator, which I call the differentiator. You know, System 7 has a very strong focus, and you've mentioned it before, on employee and customer happiness, not just satisfaction. We hear all the time, it's about customer happiness, it's about customer satisfaction, but very few people even talk about the employee happiness and satisfaction. Can you explain to us how that philosophy shows up on a day-to-day basis in your company?
Yeah, well, it is a commitment to the experience, and we are trying to be authentic. Like, we're trying to be a place that allows authenticity, which is sometimes hard when you're looking for accountability as well. So we have had to commit to the employees and think of System 7 as just a group of employees, including us, and commit to the kinds of processes, the employee processes, that allow for feedback and sometimes disagreement and conflict. And we've had to be better at resolving that conflict and taking serious some of these ideas that in other companies we've worked at would never have even, people wouldn't have been comfortable even bringing them up. So what we've had to do though is we tie that with, it's a human experience, right? We want to be good humans. It isn't just to the employees. And we do not differentiate actually between employees and customers. It is about being humans to humans, right? And so it really does show up in we've had to focus on making sure that it shows up in every process we write, every email we send out, every document anywhere in the company. We look at it through the lens of, are we being good humans, right? Are we actually trying to be exceptional? Are we focused on happiness, not satisfaction? Which is really easy to say, but again, it ends up being much harder when you have to look at every bit of your operation through that lens and commit, again, to money decisions or culture decisions and leaning towards culture.
Yeah, that sounds like how do you benchmark that? Because like you said, it's easier said than it is done. I mean, the idea, the theory makes complete sense. And there'll be people listening and watching here go, yeah, I love that. That makes complete sense. But as you say, the nth degree, you're literally going to have to dial it down, and then you've got to have some form of benchmark. What is for simplicity wise, what was the benchmark that you guys worked to?
So there was two benchmarks. It was employee. We do a culture survey every 6 months, and we do many surveys in between. And we turn those results into conversations and actionable items. And we talk very openly internally about the things that we could do to improve the employee experience. And if we score below a certain amount on a culture survey, we do something about it. And we bring it up to everybody and say, hey, we want to fix this. What are some ideas that we could do? And the same thing. So our two top benchmarks for the entire company is customer happiness, right? We want over 95% of customers to respond respond to anything that we do with they were happy. And okay is not okay. Happiness is the only thing that is okay for us, right? And the same thing with on the employee side is satisfaction is not okay. If we're going to commit to let's improve the lives around us, let's commit to improving our lives.
Yeah, no, I love that. Especially that makes so much sense when you talk about satisfaction. That just means I'm satisfied. Yeah. That's not great. I'm just satisfied, you know. So that being said, you know, you've said customer service, you know, when we've chatted before, you've said customer service is your superpower. What do you think most MSPs get wrong about the service delivery?
I think there is not enough focus, quite honestly, on an emotional intelligence and an understanding that our job is not to technically fix things. That is a thing that we are doing. Our job is to improve the life of that person that's reaching out to us. So customer service is just as much about understanding that my job is not only to fix the problem, it is to address the human. And I think that's the easiest thing to point out and one of the hardest things to accomplish is that you have to have people, you have to make staffing choices based on people who are capable of understanding that relationship that is so necessary. But it costs so much money for us to acquire a customer that every single person in the company, and I don't care if it's an engineer, it's a salesperson, it's executive, we have to be amazing with that client. We have to understand that they're living a story and we're a tiny part of it just today. And our job is to take that story arc from wherever it is and move it upwards. And that's really it. We can get away with a lot of technical issues if they love us. And that's the thing you got to commit to is like, oh, well, what do I do? How do I act? And how do I treat them in order for them to forgive us of all the technology issues that are going to happen tomorrow, just like they did today? And how do we build that relationship so they trust us and they actually like us?
Yeah, that's a very, very good point there. You know, and as I said, things happen, you know, and people will forgive if you are serving them well. And I think it's anyone listening here, you know, if you haven't picked up on that one, pick it up, write it down, highlight it. It's such an important insight there. So who do you serve best today? What type of business is your perfect fit for your MS offering?
Yeah, we do really well with medical and financial. That seems to, and even construction and car dealership. So we have ended over the years, we've got a lot of customers in those four verticals. But really, like our medical is one that we really shine. And part of that is our ability to introduce security tools and convince people to use them and train them and commit to, hey, we understand that this is going to change your experience. And we seem to do well in the medical industry. Some of that is some of the people that we have collected on our team are just good with medical. And financial is strangely there's a lot of financial institutions, kind of the ones who are lighter on compliance, right? Investment firms that we do really well with. And I don't necessarily know why that is. It is just something that we've ended up with over time. And now that we understand that business or whatnot, we are getting referred into other businesses by them because we do it so well. And we just understand what their day-to-day flow looks like, their processes, their operation looks like.
Well, that's a perfect segment into what I was going to ask next is that referrals, like any MSP, any great company, referrals have always been a huge driver for you. But yeah. I know you're now shifting gears. You're looking at other things now. What's working right now in terms of new client acquisition for you?
Yeah. So, man, one of the things when we talk about culture and the fact that we want to build a better place to work and we want to be good humans and it ultimately needs to be about improving the lives of those around us, we have had to learn some hard lessons on the sales side. The thing that we had coming in the door that a lot of MSPs don't is that we had hundreds of customers that already knew us. And a lot of them maybe liked us even. Now, we thought that we had a certain kind of relationship with those folks. And what we end up finding out when you go and talk to those folks is that they did not necessarily look at the relationship like we did. It was very important to us because they're paying us money. And we learned that we had to do a lot of work for them to trust us in order to even come to them and say, hey, we have MSP services that we think would be beneficial for you. And it took us a little bit to learn that on the account management side. And quite honestly, that was our entire sales focus for a while. And we learned some really important lessons about know, like, and trust, right? They got to know us. They got to like us on some level and be a cultural fit somewhat. But ultimately, they have to trust us. And then when we started to do sales, we did, I think, the same thing that a lot of MSPs did is we paid a lot of money for traditional marketing and you know, marketing companies. And we brought in a lot of very good traditional sales people. And one of the things that it took us a while to learn was that our focus on relationship building and also coupled with the fact that our product is very prescriptive, it is not a good fit for everybody. It is an all or nothing. Or the way that we bill our services is everything is included or nothing. nothing is included. And so already salespeople are coming in the door, and it is a product that is not going to fit everybody. And also what we found is that culturally, the way that we focus on customer service, strangely, isn't a great fit for everybody. Some people just, I want a good price and I just want you to get it done. I don't really want to talk to you. And that's not who we are. We are, by nature, we kind of force our customers to have a relationship with us, not a great fit. So we had to learn a lesson on the sales side, quite honestly, where we had really good salespeople and it was an uncomfortable fit for them. And then the other thing we found out is that a lot of the customers that they would bring were an uncomfortable fit for us. And so just the same lessons that we learned on the account management side, we've had to learn on the sales side. So for us, it really is about going out and focusing on relationship building. And even further, one of the things that we've always done is that we're desperate to help people. Like, that is just a part of who we are and the people that we've surrounded ourselves with. And we leaned into that as a sales strategy. We put ourselves in positions, both with our networking and just our relationship building and our building a referral network, for instance, we wanted to put ourselves in a position where we could go be helpful to somebody that is having the struggling with something, and not in that way that a lot of companies will say, oh, hey, I'll come do a cybersecurity assessment. That's just marketing. That's not honestly helpful. That is just a way to get in the door, right? So we've had to change the way we think about that and say, no, how do we go out and honestly be helpful with no agenda? If we don't get business out of it, at least we have a relationship that might develop into something somewhere down the road. So we committed to, hey, if you're in a crisis or you're honestly having trouble making a decision about technology, we'll help and we'll do it for free, because what better way for us to show you how we work and also give you an insight to the team members and the things that we could accomplish for you. And we will be honest, there's a lot of times we go out and we'll help somebody, we're not a good fit, and we'll be upfront about that. And that is, I think, jarring to some people. And we've gotten business just by being upfront and say, hey, for what you're doing, we're not a really good fit, but we actually know people that we would trust that we can refer you to. And what we find is those people are so blown away by the fact that we'll be honest and walk away from business that they'll find ways to send us business. So, you know, we have people that we've known forever where it feels like they're working for us on the sales side just because they appreciate the fact that we were so honest and willing to prioritize the relationship over getting money.
Yeah, well, there's going to be people listening to this going, they'll have those two devils on their shoulder, one screaming and going, "Why are you giving away?" From the other one's going, "Yeah, it's a pretty good idea," you know, and stuff like that. And they'll have this battle internally. But I think what's key is that you mentioned the word three times just in that little segment there, is trust. You mentioned the word trust three times. And whether we like it or not, trust is getting harder and harder and harder to win out there in the marketplace. And if you're continually doing, like you just said, oh, let me do a free consultation, a free strategy call, or whatever the case may be, people already know what that is. That's just clothes and disguise, and people already know that. So building trust is an extremely important part today in growing your business. So as a co-founder and a leader, what role do you think authority and visibility in the marketplace plays in today's business growth arena?
It's hard because there's so much noise in the marketplace, and everybody says they're good at customer service. Everybody says they're trustworthy. Everybody says they're experts. And so you have to be willing, I think, to commit to showing your worth and showing your honesty. You got to be able to put yourself in a position to be honest. You cannot fake honesty. And so you cannot generate trust unless you have been put in a position to show them that you are trustworthy, in our opinion. And so for us, that is why we had to commit to showing up in person and doing something for them with no guarantee of anything in return, and stay away from meaningless checklists that they can fill out and give you their email, staying away from, like, protecting that trust at every step of the way, right? So try not to do the schlocky things that just get somebody to give you their email, and commit to a long-term plan too of trying to put out content that might be helpful to somebody, going and visiting people and offering up education or training to people that aren't your customers and may never be your customers. Somebody somewhere will see the good work that you're doing and the effort you're putting into just being a good human, and it will make an impact. And it just takes a little time. I think the difference is I can go out and door knock and maybe, you know, get a customer that may or may not be in a crisis or whatever. But for the kind of culture fits, the kind of loyalty that we need as MSPs over time, I think we have to just commit to building relationships and maybe be okay with it doesn't do anything for us for 6 months, maybe even 12 months. And I think today it is a longer game that we're playing than before. I think before there was less noise. And so when there was a need, somebody could look somebody up and have a conversation and you could say, hey, I'm trustworthy, here's why. And they might trust you over a simple, you know, conversation. And now people need to see things online. You know, they need to see that you have content that is helpful. They need to see how you interact with clients. They need to see something that tells them that they can trust. They have to actually trust that they will not just accept your word for it anymore, which honestly, I think is a good thing. It just extends that sales cycle, I think, now. It is a much longer process nowadays than it ever has been, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you couldn't be further away from the truth there. There's people, again, who are listening to this and through even through the other episodes, we're always referring to how sales cycles are getting longer and longer and longer now. On one side of that argument is that more people are involved, more decision makers are involved in that sales making process. But you're on the other side, you're absolutely right. Trust is taking longer to build now. You know, oddly enough, it takes longer to build and quicker to break. So This is the key thing where you've just got to, you mentioned it earlier, know, like, and trust. And I don't think there's anyone listening to this who doesn't know what know, like, and trust is. But sometimes we can be a bit flippant about it. And I think the fair factor, yeah, just because they know you and like you doesn't necessarily mean they trust you. And trust takes a long time, like you said, Matt, to start really building those foundations. And that's when you get the loyalty. You mentioned loyalty as well. Loyalty doesn't come from having no trust. There's got to have trust first, then the loyalty. That being said, you know, it doesn't really matter if, especially in our industry, we now have an industry where it doesn't matter if it's a 1 million, 5 million, 10, 20 million. There's an element of founder-led sales in there.
Yeah.
It always is. Yet when it comes to founder-led marketing, most marketing is pushed aside to the marketing department or a marketing agency or whatever. And the founder just washes their hands of it. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that founders tend to push it aside when actually they really even know how important putting that face, like you said, we're here for you. How important is founder-led marketing in your head? And why is it not being done as much as it should be done?
So it is, I am somebody that struggled with that, quite honestly. And I think part of it is that I misunderstood what my role in that was, right? And as a leader of the company, I do not need to go out and sell, which is, I think, what a lot of people think when they hear that, hey, you need to be a public face for the company. What they feel is the pressure of, I now have to go out and sell. And that's not the ask, I don't think. I think the ask is to help the company build trust with people who don't know us today. And so the way that we do that is people need to see, they need to see faces of not just the leader, but everybody, but especially the leader, because they want to see that it's okay to say, hey, we're well certified and we have a lot of experience. But hearing a conversation in context is a much better tool for people to say, I actually like that person. That person is trustworthy. It is, people, I think, require that nowadays because they're a much more savvy consumer. And there's so much more that we're doing for clients today. And they understand that it is no longer just an IT guy. We are actually a consultant that has our fingers in so much of the company. It isn't that they're asking for trust, you know, to trust us, and it's not necessary. It's absolutely necessary. They must trust us. So the ask of leaders of a company is that they show that they are trustworthy. And the way that you do that is just put out some content, put out blog posts. Video is the best way just for them to see a personality. And so I think people just misunderstand the ask. It isn't that you need to go sell. It is that you just need to in context, be able to show that you are trustworthy. The company is trustworthy.
Yeah, very, very well put, Matt. I think that's one of the best descriptions and explanations I've heard of founder-led marketing. The fact that it is misconstrued that as a founder, as I said, it doesn't matter if you're doing like multiple million figure, there's an element of founder-led sales, but founder-led marketing isn't about the selling part. Founder-led marketing is, like you say, building the trust, building that we're still trustworthy. We're still here. Here's our mission. Here's what we stand for. This is how we build our trust. You can look at me in the eye, shake me in the hat, shake me on the hands. You know, this is how we do it. It's extremely important. So I'm glad you explained that for us. Let's talk scale. What does the next phase of growth look like for System 7?
Yeah. So for us now, I'm going to admit up front that we are never going to be a billion-dollar company. That is not our goal. So Keith and I have been, for the 10 years that I've been here, we have this ambitious side of us. but we've learned the lesson over time that when push comes to shove, we always choose the culture and quality of life over massive amounts of sales. And also, we are the kind of service that we provide is not something that's going to tax over and over again. And we're okay with that. We're actually comfortable. We have good lives. We take care of the people around us, and that's what we're after. So scale for us is, I think, smaller than some other folks. We will be nearing the $4 million mark, and our goal is to get to $10 million in a few years and then reassess at that point. And again, it is about us assessing our quality of life and the quality of life of all of the people that work for us and all of our customers. And so we don't have grand plans. Our plans are very specific about we want to grow in order to do a better job of taking care of those around us, including all of the staff at System 7. So those are our scale plans. It's pretty
simple. Yeah, I loved you said that because they are. And I know that our audience here are so varied in their goals and the desires and whatnot. And you're quite right. There'll be people who are listening who are very much VC backed or whatever. Yeah. That's run faster. Yeah. That's their attitude. Then they've got the bootstrap guys who, like you said, I'm happy to get from 2 million, 2 million to 5 million, 5 million to 10 million. And then we'll reassess. I love what you said there. We'll just reassess there. It doesn't mean we're going to go from 10 million to 100 million. That's not necessarily where the focus is. So our audience is very, very varied like that. You know, to loved and hear your candor on that is very refreshing, because people tend to hide behind, I think, oh, in order to be successful, we must be reaching for the moon. And that's not necessarily the case. It's a lifestyle. You build a lifestyle. You build a business for the lifestyle. And if it starts eating into that lifestyle, then the business has taken over, not you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think for us, we had to understand that what was the end result that we were after. And it was as simple as let's have a good family life and let's have a fun and good work life. And that is the end result. There is nothing more. There is nothing else. That is all that we're trying to do. We got to work somewhere. So, I think we get into conversations where people do talk about what they're trying to accomplish or whatnot. And there's actually a community in the MSP world that understands it could be as simple as just having a good life, And so we have actually found quite a few people more in the MSP world than ever in the ISP world. The ISP world is a growth focused world. Yeah. And so I do think there's a lot of owners and leaders out there that I think would be comfortable admitting that, hey, I just want to have a good life. And that's all I'm after. I'm not after, some 10X kind of growth.
Pattern. Yeah. Do you know what? It's also reassuring. And I'm pretty sure some people will be listening to this. It's certainly for me is that, if I was your client, I'd be listening to you thinking, lovely. I love this. He's got more time for me. Yeah, they've got more time for me, because this is a challenge when if you're leaning over your skis too much, because all you want to do is grow, something's going to suffer, something's going to break, and it's usually at the expense of your clients. And then, like we said, trust is taking a long time to build, and you break it just like that because you just focus on the wrong things or different things. So love that kind of for you. So if there was one mindset shift or lesson you wish more MSP founders knew about growth, what would it be?
About growth, I think for me, and I'm not sure how much we are like everybody else, it was us understanding that it was going to take us a little bit longer to grow, and it was going to take us a little bit longer to find the kinds of clients we wanted to work with, and we needed to be okay with it. So some of it was just accepting what our culture meant for our growth. We are not growth first focused. That was not going to be the thing. And growth for us was just as much about quality of life as it was about anything else. And so we had struggled, I think, for a long time with the idea that we wanted to grow, right? Like every company, we were ambitious. We're ambitious guys. And we also needed to protect that quality of life. And then we've been presented with things over the last decade where we had opportunities to grow, and we realized it was really destroying quality of life for not just us, but for a lot of people. And we weren't willing. We were willing to pivot away. And then we would tend to beat ourselves up. Why aren't we growing faster? And then, so there was a little bit of maturing that needed to happen for us to accept that for us to protect our culture, we were not going to grow as fast as we might have dreamed when we were 25. And it wasn't that we just needed to accept it. We needed to embrace it and be happy with the fact that we were going to add customers that were going to treat us well and that understood what our mission was and what we were trying to accomplish, and that our happiness was not about the revenue goals and the profit goals that most of our careers we had been pushed by. And then understanding that if we were going to measure happiness, that had to be the thing. And we then looked at growth as a way for us to reach those happiness goals. And that mind shift for us was critical, because then we stopped spinning our wheels doing a lot of the traditional sales and marketing stuff, and we focused on the things that we were good at and we enjoyed doing anyways, that actually got us to what our end goal, which was customer happiness, employee happiness.
You know, that is so refreshing to hear, as I said, because, you know, as I said, there tends to be this unspoken rule that if you're in business, you've got to push as hard as you possibly can. And at the expense, even though it's like common sense, we know that the more you push, the more stressful it gets, the quality of life drops. But even though it's common sense, it's not common practice, like everything else. And so it's really refreshing to hear it from another perspective from that. So Matt, it's been absolutely great. Thanks for that. If people want to learn more about you, more about potentially working with you, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so our website is www.system7.net. I'm on LinkedIn. You can search up Matthew Myers with one T. Find us there. And System 7 is on LinkedIn, and we're on all the social medias. We have a fairly active YouTube presence where we are trying to build that trust. But the easiest way is probably through LinkedIn, both to connect with System 7 and with me as well.
Well, I'll make sure those links are in the show notes so people can just do a one click straight through to you from that, because I'm no doubt there's going to be people thinking, I need that lifestyle. I need to learn how to do that. That'd be great. So thank you very much, Matt. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And thank you so much for sharing those insights with us today.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Gary. I appreciate the time.
That has been great. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as always, my ask is always the same. If you've taken one or two or four or 10 insights from Matt today, please make sure you like them and you comment below so that other people can take note of those insights. But more importantly, please make sure you share. And the more you share, the more we grow. And that's how we all become even more successful, no matter what success means to you. So until our next episode, keep striving, keep being positive, and keep being profitable. See you later.